Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Three Martini Lunch as we continue our end-of-the-year awards. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and we're down to the last 2 days of these awards. Tomorrow we'll have our Person of the Year, our Turncoat of the Year, and our Political New Year's Resolutions, but three more martinis slash awards to hand out today. And Jim, today we start with the most underreported story of 2011.
I'm going to offer kind of two themes, and you know, perhaps somebody out there managed to do these kinds of articles, but I kind of wish we saw more of them, and I feel like probably it's what the country needs most after we've just completed another year in which the state of the economy is front and center. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more discussions with job creators and saying, all right, guys, why aren't you hiring? And I don't just mean big corporations. I mean, you know, mom and pops down the stores. I mean, I kind of try to have these conversations when I find myself talking to restaurateurs and folks who own small businesses. My suspicion of why you don't hear a lot of this is because the answers would be displeasing to the administration. I keep hearing about the high costs of regulations. I keep hearing about the high costs of energy and fears over cap and trade. I keep hearing about, you know, taxation and compliance costs and property taxes and all the various little business taxes that federal, state, and local governments layer on one on top of another. And I also think about, you know, healthcare costs and how, you know, this is that Obamacare has not made things any better and, in fact, has made things more complicated. And you know, a lot of capital is right now on the sidelines saying, you know, wait a minute, I have no idea what's going to come out of Washington in the months to come or years to come. And until things get more stable, that, you know, businesses don't want to spend money to hire people and take on additional long-term expenses. So I would like to have seen a lot more into this. And I think that, you know, I think this is at the heart of kind of the challenge before America right now. I mean, you look at everything from foreign policy to everything else, our economy has been in stagnation since late 2008. We have a president and a large chunk of Congress that does not want to learn any lessons from this and really don't want to change anything other than the big government solutions they've always been endorsing. So if more folks talk to those who are in the position of hiring people, I think we would have a better understanding of the economy. I think the American people would have a clearer view of what kind of policies they wanted to see coming out of Washington.
Mine is also on the job front, but in a different way, and that is the story of Solyndra. This is a story that finally got a little bit more attention once the Energy Secretary testified before Congress, but for the most part, it's a story that the administration has tried to squelch, and successfully so. This is a story, of course, of the $535 million in taxpayer money that got sent to this solar panel-making firm out on the West Coast, one that Obama had publicly trumpeted as the future of the U.S. economy. Well, of course, it went bankrupt. The administration kept pumping money into it, even though it was clear that it was going to go bankrupt. And then, oh yeah, the private investors got their money back and the taxpayers didn't, which was exactly the opposite of the policy going in. Thanks so much for that. And the media, if this has happened in a Republican administration, you absolutely know that this would have been the subject of wall-to-wall live hearings on CNN and MSNBC and everywhere else because of the corruption and cronyism of the Republican administration. But in this case, it's just an investment that went bad, Jim.
Good choices. I think I can hear people yelling out there that Fast and Furious would have been another excellent nomination. I think the reason I would not nominate it for underreported is just observing that it has been reported, just not in the publications we'd like to see it reported. I think, you know, The Daily Caller has done a great job. NRO has done stuff. Talk radio has talked about it. Fox News, even CBS. CBS has one. Cheryl Atkinson has been doing kick butt work in this. So I don't think you can say that Fast and Furious has been completely ignored. It's just there are certain chunks of the media that refuse to acknowledge that there's any legitimate story here, even though it involves U.S. lawmen being killed by weapons sent by the U.S. government across the border to drug cartels. I mean, you couldn't come up with a bigger scandal. And yet somehow, for some reason, it doesn't get through. So honorable mention to that, but I don't think it quite fits our criteria there.
Yeah, there you go. On to the exact opposite now. Jim, your most overreported story of the year.
I'm going to mention, it's kind of an overreported angle to this. We've seen President Obama's poll numbers generally been pretty lousy through much of the year. There's a possibility of a very slight uptick, but he's been in the 40s and dipping down into the 30s in some polls. Very often, you will see in these polls, people will then emphasize, well, his job approval is getting down to the low 40s, but still Americans still find him very likable. And I've had offered quite a bit of thoughts of that. I think I'm no longer in the category of finding the president all that likable. But there's a part of me that hears that information and wants to say, well, so what? I mean, you know, what makes, it's swell that everybody still thinks he's got a nice smile and he's, so charming and so eloquent in his speeches. But if he's doing a lousy job, you know, I mean, is the presidency a personality contest? Does it, you know, at some point, don't we want something other than results? I marvel at that likability is considered so decisive rather than results in terms of the presidency. There are a lot of, you know, conservatives who say that is a reflexive fear, kind of the Bradley effect, this argument that Americans feel a little anxiety-ridden about Obama, you know, saying that they dislike the first African-American president. I just kind of feel like there's this, I almost feel like there's a you know, what President Bush would call the soft bigotry of low expectations regarding President Obama. This insistence to say, well, he's really not gotten anything we wanted him to do, and the country isn't better off than it was 4 years ago, and he's been a disappointment in life, but we still like him. And I just kind of feel like this is such a desire to avert our eyes from the totality of his record, or to find some sort of silver lining and showcase it. And I actually think that, you know, Obama has gotten some things right in the past year. He did, you know, authorize the operation to kill bin Laden, and hasn't been the, you know, the drone attacks have been increasing on Al-Qaeda, and I'll applaud the president for that. The idea that we have to insist that, well, he's a nice guy and that makes everything better, I think is almost a silly, demeaning, and nonsensical angle to take in a lot of this coverage. And I think it just says something that we were so, you know, that Obama supporters are so desperate to hang their hat onto something to tout about the guy. They're talking about he's got a nice personality. And Greg, you know what they say when you're touting someone in a blind date to talk about how nice the personality is.
Right. Yeah, there's a reason you're ignoring other aspects of it. So, yeah, good choice, I think. That's something we keep hearing about, even as his numbers slide into the high 30s in some of these surveys. For me, I really toyed with a couple of these. My close runner-up is Penn State, just due to the wall-to-wall coverage for weeks and weeks and weeks. Obviously, there are heinous charges there, an entire institution, entire university that's being rocked to the core. So a lot of that is justified, but it seemed like it turned into tabloid reporting pretty quickly and stayed that way for quite a while. But that is number two on my list. Number one is Occupy Wall Street. If you remember back in 2009 when the Tea Party got going, how reluctant the mainstream media was to cover this, and how, oh, there's something going on. Even the Obama administration, the first tax day, claimed that they didn't even know that this was happening, and they were ignored basically all the way up to Election Day 2010, except for when they were trying to berate them for going after their Congress members at town halls over the health care bill and so forth. Now, all of a sudden, with Occupy Wall Street, it's a movement that clearly isn't having the same effect that the Tea Party had, but there was such a desire to see it succeed, even though it wasn't, that they kept pumping it up. Every 2 seconds, you'd hear people say that it was nonviolent, even though after a very short period of time, that was not true. And ultimately, based on the hygiene, based on the complete lack of a message or any recommendation for Congress or really any reason for being there other than that they like to smoke weed and protest, these people lost the confidence of the American people, and you see that in the poll numbers. And yet, they're still the co-time people of the year, and you got people on the left still saying this is a massive success, when it's hard to see that anybody in Washington or Wall Street actually listened to them.
A very good choice there, Greg. I think it's safe to say that, you know, the presence of the folks and the protests, look, that is a story. It's just the idea of, one, the tone of coverage, and also just, I mean, these protests have been going on for months now, and I don't think you can argue that they've actually done much of a I'm curious about what if anything, they've changed.
Right.
Certainly no policies have been enacted. Certainly, you know, they've made a public nuisance of themselves. I'm just kind of curious about what lasting change. And you know, there's a good sense that, you know, we'll look back on the 2011 Time Person of the Year and say, what was that all about? Or at least in comparison to, say, the Arab Spring. By the way, you gave two options, and while you were mentioning that, I suddenly had, you know, another one pop into my head. Well, can we argue 2011 was the year the Ames straw poll demonstrated that it didn't really matter that much? I mean, Michelle Bachmann, is she still in it? And you know, maybe she'll do okay in Iowa, but the polls don't look all that great for her. And so really winning the Ames straw poll may not be all it's cracked up to be. And so maybe, look, I love political traditions, but maybe we're going to ask ourselves whether there's too much point to that. So that's kind of my 1A for that category.
On to the one that I think we might actually agree on this year. Best story, Jim.
As I had said a couple days ago when we heard about Kim Jong-il passing away, this, you know, 2012 was going to be a massive rebuilding year for evil. And you just, you know, you could mention Kim Jong-il, bin Laden getting whacked by the Navy SEALs. As Mark Stein likes to put it, Muammar Gaddafi got killed in the crossfire between his left ear and his right ear. This was a year of watching some very bad men who have been doing, you know, unbelievably bad things for decades They all died this year, Greg, and that's awesome. And what's also extra special awesome is that only Kim Jong-il, as far as we know, Kim Jong-il died of you know, I'm going to make air quotes as I say natural causes, because I got to tell you, Kim Jong-il made Keith Richards look like the paragon of healthy living, as I understand it, between the booze and the women and, you know, he had a waistline that makes myself look svelte, never mind some other folks. So all things considered, this is a good year for bad men dying. And we can only hope for more. Hugo Chavez has cancer. We'll be pulling for cancer in that one. You know, Castro getting up in years. So, you know, maybe by the time people listen to this, Castro will have kicked the bucket as well. So if you had to say, you look at all the people who were mentioned as people who Obama would meet with unconditionally in his first year. Kim Jong-il is gone. Assad is still around, but obviously he must be sweating in Syria. Chavez has cancer. Castro is getting up there in years. And then there's Ahmadinejad. And, you know, who knows what will happen with him in the coming year. So, you know, I like seeing bad people die. Some people find that morbid or unchristian of me. And I just say, yeah, it is.
I'm going to basically go along that same storyline, but zero in on bin Laden, because obviously he was the face of the enemy in this war. We know that over time that it, you know, spread to Iraq, and there were other dimensions of it, and he was perhaps marginalized as years went on. But he was still, in many ways, obviously the man who built al-Qaeda. He was the one who bankrolled it to a large extent. He's the one who inspired these people. And so just the relief in hearing the news that he was gone and how it went down was just one of those moments. I know people were a little bit taken aback by folks celebrating in front of the White House and so forth, but for those who have been in this area and or was one of the seminal moments of their lives, just the relief and the sense of accomplishment at that moment is something we've waited for, really, for at least since 1996, Khobar Towers, the embassy bombings of 98. I mean, 15 years it's been, and to finally see that accomplished was just a great, great moment.
Yeah, when people complain about that, Greg, I always think of that famous photo of the sailor shaking hands with the nurse upon the celebration of the victory in World War II.
Yes,
no, of course, they were passionate. People were dancing in the streets. You know, when evil – look, the life provides us all too few examples of evil meeting an untimely end, and I think the slaying of bin Laden undoubtedly was a triumph of good over evil, one that we really have been waiting 10 years for. So certainly, that's probably what I'll remember most out of 2011. And while we certainly are hoping for victories of a different sort in 2012, I think, you know, in that perspective, in a year of many challenges, 2011 definitely had some bright, shining parts in you know, for us to enjoy.
Yes, and that was certainly one of them. Jim, have a great day. We'll finish up our specials tomorrow. Have a great one.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.